Welcome back to Start Kyle Orton. I'm Travis. Kyle is here. Oh, we're in the thick of it, the most important part of the year, Kyle. The preseason. We're between preseason week one and week two.
We are, yeah.
And, you know, we're learning. So there's so much to glean from what we've seen.
Definitely.
Of course, this always tells you what's going to happen during the season.
Yeah. I mean, I think everyone calls the Monday after week one in the NFL, like, overreaction Monday, like the biggest overreaction all year happens then. But actually, I think that's second to overreaction Monday after the first week of preseason games, because at least sometimes the things that you're afraid of in week one end up coming to pass. Like, I think we had hoped it was an overreaction last year in week one to be like, wow, this pass protection scheme seems really terrible and the Bears have no interior offensive line. We hope that was an overreaction. It turned out to be a completely astute observation. But like in the preseason, especially, people are, oh man, is there some overreacting? I guess to talk specifically about the Bears, not to get down to business too quickly, I think the two biggest overreactions that I've seen, first of all, a lot of people jumping on the Austin Booker bandwagon.
Yeah, baby.
And I mean, and here's the thing. I have always thought Austin Booker had potential. I loved that draft pick last year. Wasn't expecting a whole lot from him as a rookie just because of how raw he was. Thought that this year is the year where we'd start to see some results. And I will say, you know, Austin Booker had quite a few sacks in the preseason last year. But if you were to, like, compare the tape, I feel like, between the sacks he got last year and the sacks he got this week. Last year, I felt like he had a lot of, like, hustle and effort sacks where he just kept churning and eventually got to the QB. And I felt like he won instantly, basically on every snap this week. But I saw a TikTok, and I know it's TikTok, so that's probably on me, but I saw a TikTok from my purported film guy who was like, the Bears may quietly have one of the best edges in all of football in Booker. And I was like, all right, let's slow our roll a lot. Here's what we can conclusively say about Austin Booker. He has leveled up enough that he is an unfair matchup for second and third string offensive tackles. I think that's great. I think that is a sign of progress. I think it's a sign that the arrow is pointing up, but you know, that arrow could point up quite a bit for Austin Booker before he actually reaches like a truly good NFL edge. I'm excited there about his potential too, but do we know anything about him after week one? Absolutely not, folks. Let's slow down a little bit.
Yeah, I can't wait for him to somehow be behind Dom Robinson on the fucking depth chart.
You gotta let the Dom Robinson thing go. Man, I don't think they've mentioned Dom Robinson in 2 weeks. From everything I've heard, he's well behind Booker in the depth chart at this point. It was pretty funny. I don't think it was Dennis Allen. I think it was one of the assistant coaches. He was asked about Dom Rob, and he was like, well, he's still learning the position. And I'm like, it's year four. Like, I think if he hasn't learned it yet, he's not gonna.
Yeah, we're given, like, Hippolyte, like, a chance to learn the position. I don't think Dom Robinson gets that chance anymore. This is, that is a guy who, the only thing he is leading right now is the charge to be added to the worst Bears of the last 20 years list at the end of the season.
Yeah, he's going to be...
How is he still here?
Yeah, he's going to be a strong contender in the Just Why region, because, like, I cannot believe that... I mean, because has he yet had a sack since that first game against the 49ers 3 years ago?
Ooh, good question. I mean, he played a lot last year. Let's see.
Did he really? Dominique.
Wow, it takes a while to get to his stats page, and that's a problem. That's a problem when you're a professional.
Let's see here.
NFL player.
Dom Rob has one half a sack in 2023,
yes.
According to... Okay, so last year he had a half a sack. So yeah, no, he has, in 3 years, he has two careers.
That's 2023. He didn't have any sacks last year.
Yeah, so in three years, he's got two. He's credited with two career sacks, one and a half of which came in 2022, and I believe both, all one and a half of them. Yeah, his first career game, he had seven tackles, one tackle for a loss, two QB hits, and a sack and a half. And I mean, the seven tackles represent, let's see here. He has, oh my God, Pro Football Reference has really gotten unreadable lately.
Are you sure it's not just your eyes?
Shut your mouth, you son of a bitch. I ain't got your weak eyes. I don't need glasses.
There, the bar on Pro Football Reference.
Okay, he has,
it has that area where you can compare him to somebody, and the example player is Bruce Smith. I don't think that's a good comparison.
So he had seven tackles in his first career start, and he has 49 tackles in his career. So 14% of his career, or literally 1/7 of his career tackles came in his first career game. That's truly wild, honestly.
That's,
and it was the best part was it was against it's fucking Trent Williams.
Yeah.
If we ever do like a Bears one hit wonder tournament, that could be fun. We could talk about Dom Robb's day at the office against Trent Williams.
He put everything he had out there just that game, yeah. And he's never got it back.
But yeah, no, still learning the position. So yeah, that was the Austin Booker was the first overreaction to that preseason game. The second one was that I saw.
I mean, it needs to be said, you didn't mention Zach Wilson once. He sacked Zach Wilson a bunch of times. Guys, if everybody in the NFL got to line up against Zach Wilson at a second team offensive line, they're going to rack up those sacks. Yes.
Well, like I said, the only thing that I will say about Austin Booker that I took from watching the film there, the upper body strength looks better this year, which you would hope from a guy who's got a whole year in an NFL conditioning program.
Yeah.
And he was winning instantly. It was not like an effort hustle sack like that. It was instantaneous, which is good. But as we said, there's a long road from it. It's good that he has leveled up enough, and I think you can say he's leveled up, that he's handily beating second and third string tackles instantly. That's what you want from a guy who might be a presumptive starter for you someday.
Yeah.
But that's still a long way from necessarily being a good starter. Now he's got to show he can consistently beat the ones at tackle. And that's, you know, we're not going to find that out in the preseason. So yay for Austin Booker, but some of y'all need to settle down. I've seen a lot of people doing film breakdowns about his incredible technique and his upper body strength. And like, yeah. And then, of course, the second overreaction, one that we're much more familiar with, of course, is people gassing up Tyson Bagent. For honestly, what I felt was one of the worst preseason performances of Tyson Bagent's career. Like, I thought he had a much more impressive game last year. I can't remember if it was against the Bengals or if it was against the Bills. Which of the preseason? I thought he had a much more impressive preseason game last year. But Bagent had two punts on his first two series. He took two sacks. He threw an interception. His ADOT, so for anybody who doesn't know what that means, average depth of target, how far the ball traveled in the air. His ADOT was only 4.7 yards. He only had 5.3 yards per attempt. It was not an impressive performance in the slightest, but you could tell that, especially our old boy Jim Miller, he had that bullet loaded in the chamber before the game even started, and come hell or hell high water, he was going to spend that whole fucking game doing everything but saying out loud that he felt Tyson Bagent should be the starting quarterback for this team. Literally after that touchdown pass on fourth down, which, two things about that touchdown pass. If Tyson Bagent had seen the wide open Luther Burden in the end zone on second down, they wouldn't have needed to go for it on fourth down. And while it was an impressive throw into a tight window on fourth down, there was a wide open, Kyle Monongai was wide open just standing in the end zone directly in front of him, and he missed that for a much harder throw. Like, if that throw gets broken up, the conversation is looking at Monongai on the tape and being like, why didn't he just throw it there? But yeah, Jim Miller, oh my God. So after that touchdown pass, Jim Miller literally was like, and that's why you can't stump this kid in the quarterback room on the whiteboard. No matter what they throw at him, he's just got answers. And I was just like, Jesus Christ, Jimbo, let's settle down.
Judd, you know, like every team's preseason broadcast is always that way. It's always like some backup quarterback or like lineman from 20 years ago. And they are just so excited to be there. And they're going to gas up everybody. And I hope that Tyson Bagent was just right in front of his face. And he was like, you know who this reminds me of? Shane Matthews, my former teammate.
Well, what's I mean, what's funny is that, like, even in that game, if you were really determined to do that, and we know people, we had a whole episode. The last episode was called "Everybody Hates Caleb," and I honestly, folks, I don't think things have improved on that front.
No, they fucking haven't.
Since the vibes are still bad in terms of what people really are trying to say about Caleb Williams. They just are determined to wish this kid ill. But I think that if you wanted to make that case, like, Case Keenum looked a lot better in that game, in my opinion.
Right.
The Tyson right. Bagent did. Case Keenum's a successful. He has had a successful NFL season. He's gone all the way to an NFC Championship game. You know, 2017 was the weirdest year ever. We rarely talk about it, but he did go. But yeah, it's just the Bagent thing. It puts us in this unfortunate situation, because here's the thing. Tyson Bagent was an undrafted kid who went to Shepherd, a school that I'd literally never fucking heard of. The first time he was mentioned on this podcast, I literally remember I was like, Travis, apparently the Bears signed someone named Tyson Bagent from Shepherd University. Do you want to talk about him? And you were like, no, when would I ever need to talk about that person? So he's really, and here he's, you know, he's in his third NFL season. I bet he gets a job after the Bears. This kid might stick around long enough to someday draw an NFL pension. That is a whopping success story. It's awesome. We should be able to talk about that. But this is Chicago, and the entire fandom and media ecosystem around these fucking backup quarterbacks is always so stupid. Like, maybe people don't remember, but this is exactly what it was like with Caleb Haney, because people didn't like Jay. They were always wishing ill on Jay. They always wanted to believe that anybody could be doing a better job in Jay than Jay. Actually, one of the funniest moments of that I will always remember, there was a guy, I believe his name was S.K. Jensen at the time. He was covering the Bears for ESPN. I still remember the Giants game where Jay got sacked 9 times in the first half?
Yeah, I remember that one.
Okay. I distinctly remember Todd Collins coming into that game as Jay left concussed. I remember S.K. Jensen tweeting, like, here comes Todd Collins. I know he'll get the ball out faster. And then Todd Collins, like, immediately got sacked behind that offensive line. Because people, back then, people always wanted to believe that, like, that offensive line was actually secretly fine. It was just Jay Cutler holding the ball too damn long. But yeah, people used to be like that about Caleb Haney. He'd dazzle every preseason, and people just hated Jay and wanted so badly to be rid of him. They'd be like, I think they should give Caleb Haney a look. And then he had that couple decent series in the NFC Championship game because the Packers had literally never heard of him before. And then they finally got their wish in 2011 when Jay went down. I'm being so nice to Travis, not mentioning a Caleb Haney anecdote about him personally as I tell this story. But Caleb Haney played. They got their wish. It was truly abysmal. And they just pretended they never did it. They pretended they never said it. And that's the Tyson Bagent thing. Like, he's just, there's never anyone more popular in Chicago than the backup quarterback.
Yeah, and that's kind of universal. Just across the NFL, everybody's going to go straight to the backup. I do think it's extremely funny, like you mentioned, that all of these people glom onto Tyson Bagent, and nobody mentions that Case Keenum did, like, way better. Just obviously better. And we heard that report, like, you know, the very first day of camp. Wow, Case Keenum looks really good. But everybody's like, Tyson Bagent, Tyson Bagent, Tyson Bagent. And it's just... why? I do remember Jim Miller during the game, he said, like, something just right before that first offensive drive, where he was like, well, Ben Johnson's offense is a lot like the offense that Tyson Bagent ran at Shepherd. And I was like, Jim, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, what crack are you? You don't know anything about the offense that Shepherd ran. Like, you're just saying stuff, but just... completely irresponsibly.
Well, and I think
it colors people's perception of the situation. We've already got, you know, this mass panic about him missing a net or whatever. And it just feels like, you know, pumping up Tyson Bagent is just getting these gullible Bears fans to be like, why doesn't this backup quarterback come in? Well, because he's not talented. I don't know what to tell you.
Well, and I think part of that also, too, is that there is an epidemic right now of backup quarter, like, former backup quarterbacks who have become media personalities.
Yeah.
Because wherever you go, if it's Dan Orlovsky, if it's to a much lesser extent, he's a lot better about it. JT O'Sullivan, he tends to actually value guys who are playmakers. But you got your Dan Orlovskys, you have your Jim Millers, you have Kurt Banker, I think, is the idiot Packer version. Chase Daniel out there, like they backup quarterback brain is very much about you have to at all costs you must avoid negative plays.
Yeah.
The holy trinity for these people is find a completion, don't take a sack, don't turn the ball over. And actual elite NFL quarterbacking requires risk-taking. It requires explosive plays. Those guys don't believe that because they were taught differently. They were taught to be backup quarterbacks. They were taught not to fuck it up. And in their heart of hearts, I think every one of them thinks that in the right situation – they could have been Tom Brady or at least Brock Purdy. Like if you put them on, if you just had given the coach that gave me the right scheme in the right situation, I could have been somebody. And so they glom on to a Tyson Paget. They do, cause they see themselves in him. But yeah, it's, we wasted too much time on it already, but I've seen some people go as far as to just like hope that Tyson literally sucks ass during these games just to shut people up. I'm not that far because I would like the Bears to have a good backup quarterback, but I get the instinct to want him to just shut people up by playing like ass. I really do. It's upsetting that we're there because nobody can just be normal about this person. Like the truth is Caleb Williams, maybe like if maybe he's not going to get better this year. I don't believe that, but maybe he's not. And then the Bears will have to start over. That'll be super depressing, but trust me guys, the answer is not going to be the arm wrestler's apprentice standing on the sideline. It's not like if Caleb Williams isn't the answer, the Bears don't have the answer right now there, pal.
Right. The final word here is Caleb's going to get the whole season and probably all of next season, quite frankly, regardless.
Right. It would have to be year. Like a Zach Wilson year two where yeah. he's awful and the whole team turns against him for Caleb Williams not to get three seasons.
Even if that happens, we're not coming into next season saying Tyson Bagent gets his shot. Tyson Bagent will not get his shot with this team.
Yeah.
If Caleb is that bad, if it's that much of a disaster, we're going to get an actual starting quarterback. It's not going to be Tyson Bagent. I'm sorry, folks. So there's, like I said, to me, if people were being rational, what you would be saying is Case Keenum looks nice. It's good to have that veteran option as a backup. And then you could shit on Caleb by being like, well, if he really sucks, but the rest of the team looks good, you just throw him in the dumpster and maybe Case will get us through the year and then we can throw his ass out. But that's not what people are saying. They're like, Tyson Bagent could be the future. And that is the sign of an absolutely delusional human being.
Yeah.
Like, no matter how good Caleb is, the answer is not Tyson Bagent. I promise.
Well, and I blame the retconning of Tom Brady that people have done, where because Tom Brady was a sixth round pick, people have this perception that Tom Brady had, like, Chad Pennington's arm. Like, Tom Brady had a fucking piss missile. You can watch him throw a pass 75 yards in the air to Randy Moss in the Super Bowl in 2007. That happened. Like Tom Brady had a prototypical he's not athletic compared to today's quarterbacks, but like he had a prototypical build for a quarterback in 2000. He had a good arm. He was drafted in the sixth round because Lloyd Carr wouldn't know a quarterback if it bit him on the ass. Like you shaking off your fleas there, Travis? You good?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh my God. My animals are having fun right now.
Another appearance by Travis's dog collar, folks.
That's right.
So yeah, anyways, it's just stop being dumb about the backup quarterback. I think that's really all there is to say about preseason game one. And in terms of that, I will say I think the more noteworthy event since we last recorded was probably the Bears Dolphins joint practices. Would you agree with that? Or did you have one more thing?
I suppose I would say this Tyson Bagent talk kind of bleeds in nicely to the interesting reports about Caleb having the what he did before that preseason game. It seemed like it kind of ties into why Tyson Bagent might be seeing success as well. Essentially, we were all kind of Caleb not playing in the first preseason game makes sense. Most NFL coaches now don't really value that game. But it sounds like he was out there and they ran a bunch of not quite simulated plays with the offense, about 80 plays. They huddled up, called the play, went from the huddle to the line exactly as they would. Then when Caleb, you know, called for the ball, only the person who would be his first read ran the route, and then Caleb whipped that person the ball, essentially. And they did that like a little over 80 times, apparently. And if there is any other way to explain the current situation, I guess, if you want to call it that, between Ben and Caleb, I don't know what it would be. Like, it's a drill I've never heard of any NFL coach running before, but it's so obvious in what it's trying to get out of Caleb, what it's trying to rebuild in him after last year, that it just kind of, I mean, it slaps you in the face. Well, the funny thing is, coincidentally, Kyle, like 2 days before that, I sent you this graph that I had seen, which was showing the access between EPA per play on your first read throws and how often you threw to your first read. And Jaden Daniels was all the way up on, like, always through to his first read, but had really high EPA per play. And then Caleb was on the exact opposite end of the spectrum. He threw to his first read less than almost anyone in the NFL, and he had very low EPA per play when he did throw to his first read. And it was like, yeah, because, like, first of all, there could be a problem there with Caleb throwing to his first read, but also Waldron was so bad at scheming open that first read, and we talked about it all last year.
Well, Waldron was so bad at just scheming in general. Like, I think when you find out that, like, they didn't script plays or anything, and that basically their plan every game was to, especially those games where they would go, like, no huddle early on, they literally would just, like, get to the line and ask Caleb to figure it out. Like, that, and that puts you in such a reactive position as an offense when you should be proactive, and when all the best, like, Ben Johnson is absolutely not going to wait and see what the defense is doing first before he tries to run his offense. He's never done that. So yeah, it's to get Caleb, just to get Caleb to play faster. And it's, you know, it's funny. I complain about this every year, you know, in April, everybody always says the right things at the draft when it comes to a project quarterback like Anthony Richardson or whatever, where it's like, give him the reps, ride the ups and downs. Yeah. But then, like, the minute they step on an actual field and there are downs, people are just done with the whole experiment right away. Like, whoa, I didn't mean that he was allowed to suck ever. We've got games to win. And that's what's happening with Caleb and Ben Johnson right now, is everybody's like, Caleb needs a tough disciplinarian head coach who will tear him down to the studs and teach him how to be a real NFL quarterback and address all of his deficiencies. And we find out that that's exactly what Ben Johnson is doing. Like, he is overloading him with information because he wants to see how much he can handle. He's overloading him with blitz looks because he's like, look, you took some bad sacks against the blitz last year, kiddo. We got to fix that. He's making him work under center a hell of a lot more because he barely did it in college. He barely did it last year, and that's key to a lot of stuff. He's making him use these long play calls that they haven't condensed at all. He said they'll condense them later, but right now it's important to them that Caleb get the whole play call out and understand each part of it and each component of it. They're working on this. They're doing all of this. They are completely rebuilding this quarterback, which everyone agreed is what was needed. They're being extremely hard on him, and they're throwing the kitchen sink at him. And I think it's to his credit that for the most part, there have been as many good days as bad, and that even the bad days are more, it was pretty up and down today. There's only been, I think Monday was the only practice that I've really heard of where people are like, holy shit, that looked really bad today. And that was a half walkthrough in without pads on. So after the day after a game, so it's kind of hard to put too much stock in that, but like they are not the we talked about Jaden Daniels. We said how Washington kind of built the whole offense out of the black box. They just boiled it down to everything that we already knew Jaden was good at in college.
Yeah.
Right now, Ben Johnson's kind of doing the opposite. Like, the whole offense right now in camp is being constructed out of exclusively the things that they know Caleb needs work on based off of what he did last year. And so it's not really a surprise that he's not going 10 for 10 in practice every day. But nobody wants to hear that. Everybody just wants to hear, they want their nerves soothed immediately. They want good, smooth practice reports all day, every day.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just everybody's like, Ben Johnson's got to do this right. And then you hear he has, it sounds like an incredibly detailed plan. I was actually reading an article just the other day about the plan they have specifically for Caleb, how they are coaching Caleb, and how, like, Declan Doyle, the offensive coordinator, doesn't really talk directly to Caleb. someone, I can't remember, the passing game coordinator, Press Taylor, does not really talk directly to Caleb because Ben Johnson doesn't want too many voices in Caleb's ear. So Ben Johnson talks to Caleb, and then JT Barrett, the quarterback's coach, those are the two that like work with Caleb every single day. And then the other two, the offensive coordinator and stuff, they when there's a group session, they obviously film review. When the whole offense is together, they'll obviously talk to Caleb. But as far as one-to-one mentoring, Caleb is getting that from Ben Johnson, and he's getting that from his quarterback coach, and then that's it. They're trying to keep him from getting contradictory information, from having too many cooks in the kitchen. Like, they have it planned down that much.
Right.
There is so specifically a plan for how they do it. And they took advantage of NFL game warm-up period basically to get in an unscheduled practice in pad to let Caleb practice all these routes on air and get all this verbiage and get all this stuff up to the line. That's kind of brilliant if you ask me. But yeah, there's clearly a plan here. They're not just throwing shit at the wall to see what sticks. But the idea, like, you ask people to be patient at all with the plan and they just throw a shit. And that's really where I'm at right now. And I with Bears fans and Bears media in general, they're just done being patient. They're just completely, Caleb had to come out the gates last year and justify everything because people were just so exhausted by the Justin Fields experience, so worn out by the great Justin Fields Civil War. Like, everybody was just like, go out there and shut everybody else up or we're done. And just nobody has any patience right now. And it's exhausting.
I wonder if part of it is usually between these young quarterbacks for the Bears, we get a shitty veteran quarterback.
There's usually an interim, yeah.
Yeah, like we had Cade McNown, who went straight into the Jim Miller, hilariously, Shane McMahon experience, right? We got Jay Cutler, which was a whole different experience for the Bears, still somehow the best Bears quarterback we've ever had. But then, you know, we got Trubisky, but that led directly into the Foles situation,
yeah.
Whatever the fuck that was. But we went straight from Fields to Caleb Williams, and I definitely think that factor, I mean, a lot of things. We talked about this last week, but there are a lot of factors right now causing Bears fans to just be like, this fucking sucks. You know, I'm just tired of this whole thing. But yeah, you can't glean anything from practice here. This is a first-year head coach. This is, you know, Caleb coming into his second year. Lord knows what the hell they're doing. And when Caleb was asked about, you know, how he feels about the coverage, he basically said just that. He was like, I'm not, like, I understand why it's being reported the way it's being reported, but a lot of it is being reported inaccurately because they don't know what we're doing. They just see things happening, and a lot of it is inaccurate. He's like, but there's nothing I can really do about that. It's just, I hope. You know, I hope you come out and report on me accurately when we're actually playing games, which was, you know, the most mature way I think he could handle it, because it's really become a firestorm around him. And he hasn't even played a preseason game, this guy. He hasn't done shit but practice. And people are just like throwing mud at him, talking about how he's going to be the worst quarterback in the league. He's going to be a massive bust. Just, I have not seen one hopeful, oh my God, my computer clicked on and off, but I haven't seen one hopeful note, it feels like, for weeks and weeks. So, God, I hope Caleb can do something against the Bills on Sunday, and then maybe we can quiet this for 3 weeks.
Yeah, until he puts something on TV, people are not going to settle down at this point. So, but yeah, I mean, coming out of the joint practices against the Dolphins, I mean, it sounds like, I mean, Caleb was somewhat up and down, more probably, like, it sounds like about as up as down. He did throw one interception, and then he took a couple, you know, would be sacks. But yeah, and the Bears defense was apparently quite dominant against the Dolphins offense.
And then they had to go and joint practice the Lions, and I guess they got trounced again.
Yeah. Omar Kelly, who's a super annoying Dolphins beat writer, was whining that the Bears were too rough in the joint practice and tackled too hard. And, like, guys, I don't know if you know the Dolphins' reputation right now, but, like, you are not helping the softest baby shit allegations.
Yeah, that team is in absolute free fall and disarray right now. Yeah. Like, I've never seen a team that's so, like, right in the middle of the pack. Like, maybe a That was my cat playing the piano.
Cat playing the piano. You know, it's been a couple months since we've had a cat playing a piano on this podcast. It's about fucking time.
There you go, man. He had to throw a couple of notes in there. But yeah, like a team that's just probably going to go 9-8, right? And everybody is just like, this fucking garbage team. Like, I want to see everybody fired. We need to let people go. Like, you want to talk about a fan base that's done with their own team. Dolphins fans feel like they are like 1-0-1 start away from asking for everybody to be fired right now. And yeah, certainly doesn't help that every joint practice, they're all out here whining and crying about how they got tackled. And oh my God, Tua's little statement about how Tyreek Hill needs to do a lot of work in the locker room to regain trust, because he made like one comment at the end of last year about how maybe he doesn't want to be in Miami anymore. Like, that dude gets his feelings hurt more than he gets concussions that almost kill him. It's just, it's an embarrassing team. So again, like we mentioned this last week, it's just so hard to come even out of these joint practices and be like, well, you know, we're looking good or we're looking bad, because you just don't know who you're playing.
Yeah, you don't know what they're going to look like. And that's kind of why I've never been one even to get into NFL strength of schedule discussions. When people are like, this is going to be the easiest slate of defenses, or this is going to be the hardest schedule, blah, but I'm like, that's based off last year's information. In the NFL, things change every year. We know that half the teams that made the playoffs are going to miss them, and half the teams that missed the playoffs are going to make them. And so it just preseason strength is, so you don't know, like, we don't know. I don't know if the Dolphins are, if the Bears are about to go 12-5 this year, and we're going to look back at those Dolphins practices as like a sign that Dennis Allen had put together a top five unit, or the Dolphins are going to go 3-14 this year, and you're going to be like, yeah, it just turned out the Dolphins sucked eggs, you know? There's only so much you can take from all this stuff. Oh, I guess I did have one last thing to say about preseason week one. Have you ever seen people lose their minds so much about a coach deciding not to play his starters?
I don't think people are used to this yet.
That is like the default for half the teams in the league now. People were like, I mean, and again, it also just plays into the over-the-top Caleb hate right now, because I saw people, like, even media people, like, even some media outlets deliberately phrased it in a way that made it sound like Caleb had made the call himself not to play in that game, where they were like, thoughts on Caleb Williams sitting out preseason week one. Like, that really makes it sound like this was his call. And in fact, he actually did an interview and he was like, I would like to play, but it's up to coach. It's up to Ben, you know, like he wanted the reps.
Yeah. I mean, and they gave him 80, whatever reps before the game, like they got work in that they wanted to get in with Caleb. Yeah. Nobody gives a shit about these preseason games, man.
Yeah. Well, and there's like, there've been false starts and delay of games in camp. Like the beat writers are really harping on these delay of game calls.
Yes.
In training camp. And I could not give a shit. Like, no shit. Everyone there is learning a new offense. You've got three new starters on the offensive line at a minimum. Like, no shit. There are sometimes false starts. No shit. There are sometimes delay of games. It is August 12th. You can't make me care about training camp delay of game penalties. You just can't. But they're really harping on it, and they're sitting there like, see, this is why they need those preseason reps. This is why they need, you know, it's far from a clean operation right now. And I'm just like, I don't know. Do you think two series against the Dolphins in a glorified scrimmage, that's what's going to keep them from having a false start this year?
Yeah, like, need the preseason reps, Kyle, so that you won't get those delay of game penalties in practice the next day. That's why, just, of course. Yeah. That's what preseason is for, is getting ready for practice.
Yeah. That's just, it's crazy to me, like, how negative the attitude is. Like, I guess I kind of expect the hate about Caleb Williams, but, like, the attitude about Ben Johnson, too. Like, you can't tell me that if any other franchise right now had hired Ben Johnson with the reputation he had, that it would be this negative and people would be questioning him so much. Like, I don't remember anyone questioning Kyle Shanahan's approach to the preseason, his first year at the 49ers. It was all sunshine and roses because he was the new genius head coach in town, so... Very weird. Extremely negative.
It is a negative fan base, and the national media has caught on to that, and it's just Bears fans are so ready to drink from that hose right now. They're just like, yeah, give me negativity. Right, just fuck this franchise. So I don't know. We'll see. We'll see by like week five or six how these people are feeling.
Yeah.
It's a little hard to be a Bears fan who's positive right now because I can't find anybody else. You know, it's you and me, and I hope there are other people out there who are excited for this season, man. It's rough.
Well, and I think even for me, like, I don't know how good they're going. I have a hard time nailing down what I think their prediction is going to be just because I don't know. Like, last year, I felt confident making a prediction that ended up being wrong about the wins just because I felt I knew what the defense was going to be. I don't know what this defense is going to be under Dennis Allen. Like, I think they could be pretty good. But I don't know. I don't really have a good idea of what they're going to be. But, I'm excited to find out because I guess unlike 99% of people on earth, I'm willing to maybe even give it till midseason before I declare Caleb Williams and Ben Johnson a horrible bust.
Crazy.
And ask for their public executions. I don't know. Yeah.
Kyle, you should be trying to throw these guys out after two practices, all right?
I am right.
Practice is not the time to practice, all right? You should be a finely tuned unit right now before you go into practice.
Well, like we said, it's just because so many people, they've convinced themselves they're coping because they made these excuses before for offenses and quarterbacks that didn't deserve them. But as I keep saying, 2019 training camp is not why Mitch Trubisky sucked, guys. He sucked before that. He sucked most of his career. You were asking for 2019 training camp to provide you with information that, like, he woke up and decided not to suck. Like, he had leveled up, and it just didn't happen. But, like, the training camp isn't what did it. So you don't need to, like, there are good offenses out there. Like, I've been hearing the Lions have been fairly up and down in practices so far this year offensively because, you know, they lost their offensive coordinator. They're learning a new way to do stuff, and it's going to be bumpy at times. I have heard that the Washington Commanders with the almighty Jaden Daniels have looked kind of spotty at times offensively in training camp this year. And is that a harbinger for a year or two regression that might save me a little bit? Maybe, but it's probably just that it's fucking practice. And good offenses will have bad practices and bad offenses will have bad practices. And you just don't know until the season starts which one of these things you got. Bears fans are just predispositioned to assume bad equaled bad because that's all we've ever seen before. But like it does happen.
Yeah, and I mean, people are ready for football to come back, and everybody just wants football, football, football. They want the news. They want to see people throwing the ball. They want to see plays being run. And you're looking at fucking practice, man. You're not going to get anything from that. But everybody is putting all of this hype for the season, this interest in the game, onto what they can see, which for some reason is practice. This makes me want them, you know, put practice behind closed doors again, kick these fuckers out. Like, just have people come out and the linemen running routes against defense.
Yeah, I think the Bears really only have, like, one public practice left.
Yeah.
Tomorrow, the scrimmage with the joint practice with the Bills. And God help me, I hope that goes well, since people are just determined not to be cool. God help us if it's a disaster. But, I'm at that point already where I'm just like, you know what, I just don't want training camp updates anymore. Just get me to the 3-week period where they can work on this shit in private and get ready for week one. I think that's probably it for the Bears right now to discuss. We're not going to do like a formal like NFL preview this year.
I mentioned the word preview to Kyle and he was like, I don't want to do that.
It's what every other podcast is doing. And it's my least favorite kind of content. It really is.
Content.
I know it is. Well, that's what I feel like. That's what I feel like I'm doing though. When it's like, let's do our NFL previews or whatever. I'm like, that's creating content for the sake of content. You know, I like to come on here and be like, look, let's talk about whatever esoteric bullshit I want to talk about today. That's the stream of consciousness.
Okay, well, bring Kyle. If you have something esoteric to bring onto the podcast, please share with the class.
I mean, I kind of want to talk about that, the little brief conversation you and I were having about how the offensive guru label, because that was like, I thought that was a really funny observation.
What makes an offensive guru?
Well, because there was a radio show, someone was saying, she was like, I think Caleb Williams is going to have a bad year this year because, sure, people are saying Ben Johnson is an offensive guru, but like Chicago's never developed a quarterback before. And you know, Matt Nagy was an offensive guru, and so was Mark Trestman and Adam Gase. And like, okay, let's back that truck up a little bit. for some reason, every single offensive coordinator that ever gets a head coaching job is an offensive guru. And when they fail, that's always said retroactively, like really like condescending, like, oh, offensive guru, Matt Nagy. But I don't remember anybody when Matt Nagy was actually in the process of being hired referred to as an offensive guru.
Definitely had, not Matt Nagy.
He had
once.
He'd called six games worth of plays for the Chiefs, and Andy Reid had final call on the mic for all of those. Like, I think the hope around Matt Nagy was like, yeah, he seems like he's young. He's been with Andy Reid. He seems like he's got a good personality. Guys like to play for him. Hopefully this works out, but nobody was talking about the Matt Nagy offense and the scheme and the brilliance of it. Like, you didn't get that. Like, Ben Johnson, I do think the label offensive guru fits the same way it did with Kyle Shanahan. Like, Ben Johnson, like, is a guy who has created a scheme of his own. It is uniquely his. He put it together, built it from the ground up in Detroit, and has coordinated that unit for 3 years. Was it three seasons?
Three seasons now.
Yeah.
Yep.
Three seasons, two of which they led the NFL in scoring, basically. Like, I think it's a fair thing to put on Ben Johnson. So if Ben Johnson's flop, fine. You could say guru condescending, but nobody considered Matt Nagy an offensive guru. And the most insulting one is Mark Trestman. Mm-hmm. That was a man who was literally exiled to Canada after flopping as an NFL offensive coordinator in San Francisco and in Arizona and in Oakland, and then flopping at North Carolina State as an offensive coordinator. He had to go to the CFL to find a job. That is not an offensive guru. When the Bears were interviewing him, we thought it was a joke. I wrote it down in my diary. Oh my God. Phil Emery told a very funny joke today. I'm interviewing a CFL head coach for the Bears job. And then they gave him the job. I thought it was like a Rooney rule thing. The Looney rule where like you have to interview a Canadian now for a job or whatever. But no, they actually hired him. But like nobody was. Do you remember the attitude around the Bears? Mark Trestman, all of us were like, what the fuck?
Yeah,
Mark Trestman, the guru.
They said guru. They definitely did, but it was quarterback guru. They always said that. Fucking time you would talk about him, they were like, he's a quarterback guru. He's a quarterback guru. He's run all these quarterback camps, and it was like, oh, what's the list of quarterbacks he's had? All
not a good list.
NFL busts to a man. Every single quarterback he had worked with, he was like, holy shit, that's your quarterback guru? But yeah, I mean, you're not a guru unless, to me, you've led the NFL with your offense before. Like, Ben Johnson could qualify because, yeah, he's had the best offense in the NFL the last 2 years. That works. Like, what he does is proven to be better than anything else in the NFL at the NFL level. You know, like you said, Kyle Shanahan came in. Sean McVay was another one where people were like, that's an offensive guru. But all these other guys, like, you know, nobody called, like, Charlie Weiss. Like, I don't know why that name popped into my head, but that wasn't an offensive guru. That was like, well, he was the offensive coordinator for a good offense, which is run by a legendary head coach.
Right.
That's where most of these offensive coaches come from. That's your Matt Nagy, right? It's like, well, the Andy Reid tree, I guess. Like, we got to try this, you know? Someone's going to pick up a San Francisco offensive coordinator. Someone's going to pick up the Rams offensive coordinator. You know, God help them. One day somebody will try to hire Declan Doyle. And maybe I'll be rid of the Doyle family forever from my life. What a magical moment that will be. But it's not, most of these guys aren't actual offensive gurus because it's so rare for them to ever be available, which is the other part about why it's so fucking annoying that we took Mark Trestman and not the actual offensive guru who was sitting there who wanted to be our head coach at the time.
Yeah. Well, and the Adam Gase thing was funny too, because I remember Adam Gase was briefly, like, he was a hot commodity after Peyton had that record-setting year, but he didn't get, he struck out on some head coaching side and like two consecutive head coaching cycles trying to get the big job, because he was never really given the guru label, because the thing that everyone remembers about Peyton Manning is that he was considered essentially his own offensive coordinator. So like no one ever gave too much credit to Peyton Manning's offensive coordinator. I remember he struck out on some head coaching. Like the belief was originally that he was going to get a head coaching job. And then I remember it was a surprise when he had to follow John Fox to Chicago. Because people thought he was headed for it, but he didn't. He struck out. So, like, I don't know that you can be an offensive guru if you struck out. But also really funny in one other way, in that Adam Gase actually did get, like, the best season of Jay Cutler's career out of him.
True.
And then parlayed that into getting a head coaching job in Miami. So I don't know that, like, Adam Gase's legacy in Chicago specifically is that of failure anyways. But, yeah, and someone else pointed out, like, no one does that for defensive coordinators who get a head coaching job, because defensive coordinators are just like treated like default leaders of men. Like if you're a defensive head coach, you probably got the job not because of your defense, but just because you're a coach. But if you're an offensive coordinator who got the job, you only got it because you're a little guru with your little whiteboard and you're a nerd. And, you know, if you don't prove that it was worth it, you're just another failed guru. But if you're a defensive guy, you know, all that ever happens to defensive coordinators is they get fired and go back to being defensive coordinators somewhere.
Very true. I feel like the only one I ever heard of as being a defensive guru was Wade Phillips. I think I heard that used. That's just because fair. He's such a sweet old man.
Wade was a good defense. Wade was a guy that I think even Wade kind of, I guess I'm going to make a, you know, for my many Scottcast listeners who are Civil War history buffs, Wade Phillips is kind of like the Ambrose Burnside of NFL head coaches, where people kept giving him the head coaching job. And I think no one knew more than Wade Phillips that he wasn't qualified for it, but he would just accept it. And then he'd putter through for a couple years and then he'd go back to being a defensive coordinator, which is what he actually liked. So yeah. So you want to talk about some other NFL stuff though? What do you want to talk about first? You want to talk about the Colts quarterback battle, or do you want to talk about the Browns quarterback battle, specifically Shedeur Sanders?
Ooh, it's messes all around. Shedeur Sanders is so funny because, like, we talk some junk about Shedeur Sanders before the draft and during the draft, and we kind of said, well, you know, I think he's a third round talent, but I think you could easily see him falling, because why would you draft a third round talent if his dad is Deion Sanders and they're going to be acting this way? And then he fell, and it's kind of like, yeah, I could see that. So that all sounds like we're, you know, just talking shit about him. Man, he looked better than any of the other rookies that played in preseason week one. I really enjoyed watching him play. And of course the Browns shit on him right after, and now he's injured, and it just, you just get the sense that the Browns are like okay with that, which is just, they are going to run Joe Flacco out there for no reason whatsoever to nobody's benefit on this planet. And I can't believe it. They have no plan. They are such a miserable organization. They really deserve all this, I guess, for bringing Deshaun Watson on, but God, what a incredible clusterfuck. I hope that Dylan Gabriel can play here in preseason week two, because I really do want to see what he looks like compared to how Shedeur looked in that first week. Now, I will say, Kyle, and you pointed this out, Shedeur did the most Shedeur thing he could possibly do. He ran backwards and turned around again and almost lost 40 yards.
Yeah, he flirted with disaster. But again, and people don't count almost sacks the way they do almost interceptions, which I get. Like, here's the thing. I don't think Shedeur, I don't know that he's ready to start week one. And I mean, that's the Browns line, is like, if you're watching practice every day, he's absolutely not like ready. But like at the same time, if you are the Browns, you profit nothing from having Joe Flacco start. I guess, I don't know, if you want to pretend with your defense that you're going to be in contention for a bit and you want to start Joe Flacco until you're not in contention, fine, whatever. But like, pare things down. Make Shedeur your damn QB2 and let the kid like get those reps when he needs them, because this, Dylan Gabriel's not a thing. He's never going to be a thing. Kenny Pickett has never been a thing. Famously a point I've made a lot. Like, just get rid of that noise. They seem absolutely determined not to give the kid the chance to earn anything. And I think that's because, I mean, from everybody I've heard, again, with the Browns, it was the owner's call to draft him once he fell far enough that he didn't feel like he was being ridiculous overriding his football ops guys. They never wanted Shadur. But yeah, I thought Shadur's debut was a little overrated. That's what's really funny about Shadur. I keep, as I said, this is that there's so much rhetoric and so much discourse around him to the point where you actually would think he is like a Caleb Williams prospect, where he's like superstar potential, but yeah, so controversial. But like, think about Shadur as this is when we did our QB episode this year. Like, this is the most average quarterback prospect like of all time. I think he could be fine. He, when he doesn't get too much dip on his chip and leak out the back of the pocket, he is a smart, accurate point guard style quarterback. And you saw that a little bit in the throws he did make.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's really funny that, to me, that we do this over a guy who basically, like, he's like Tua with pizzazz.
He's at best. He's David Garrard if he overestimated his speed. Yeah. That's it.
I don't even know if he's as good of a runner as David Garrard was.
No, he's not. He's David Garrard, but he thinks he's faster than he is. Yeah. And he's just always getting surprised that he's not outrunning these defensive ends.
Yeah, I mean, I think the other comp I put on him was what I said, he was chaos Bryce Young, because I see the same kind of stuff that I see with Bryce Young. And notably, Bryce Young, you know, I'm still not like a believer in Bryce, but I felt like he started to look more like the guy that I thought he would be last year. Because like my prediction, you know, if you remember, I had Bryce QB2 in that draft. I didn't really want to rank him over Anthony Richardson, but I thought Anthony Richardson's accuracy issues were a bridge too far. And I couldn't get all the way there. And so far, that one's looking pretty good for old Uncle Kyle.
Whoa, only half the time. The other half the time.
The other half. Look, 50% of the time, it works. Well, 47% of the time, it
works.
That's
right. That's all we round up here, okay?
But yeah, no, but like I said, Bryce Young, I didn't think he was going to be awful like he was his rookie year. I said I thought Bryce Young was going to be like a solid starting quarterback who was never spectacular, never lived up to being the number one overall pick, and would need help around him that was hard to justify for a guy being a number one overall pick. And I thought you saw signs of that in Bryce last year as he adjusted to NFL game speed. The anticipation that he showed in college started to show up a little bit more in the NFL. I think Tet McMillan's going to be huge for him, and he's willing to just like let it rip and trust his guys with 50-50 balls. So I think there's a path now to Bryce Young actually being an NFL starter that looked impossible a year ago. And I think that's what Shadur, like, that's the best case scenario for Shadur too. And plus, this is also why I have a lot of hope for Caleb cutting down his sack rate too, is that Bryce cut his sack rate massively from year one to year two, because he kind of learned how to play with less dip on his chip. He kind of learned the same thing Caleb has to learn, the same thing Shadur has to learn. Like, you can't leak out the back of the pocket like that. You don't have as much time as you used to have. Like, I think he can cut it similarly. But yeah, if Shadur did that kind of thing, like if he had the same kind of leap that I saw in Bryce Young in year two, where he learned, like, okay, you can't leak out the back of the pocket. You got to let it go with a little bit more anticipation. You got to trust your guys on some 50-50 balls. It's not always going to be clean. I could see Shadur being a functional starting quarterback, but, you know, people are, they're so high or they're so low on him. And but yeah, it's just truly stupid that the Browns are letting, I don't know, pride at this point get in the way of them just like turning this into, okay, fine, Joe Flacco's your starter, but make the kid your backup. The kid who's going to, he's going to be your plan should at some point be to find out what you have in him. And it seems like they're actively trying not to find out what they have in him.
It does feel like they actually do have some weird, like, boner for just humbling this one specific kid, like chewing him up and spitting him out and never giving him a chance. And I like, it seemed ridiculous when people were talking about that weeks and weeks ago, but there's just almost no explanation otherwise at this point. It just feels like they really hate him and they want to make him look bad. I will say my favorite part about every rookie quarterback, every preseason week one, is when they all get that oh shit look on their face when they realize that every defensive end in the NFL is actually the best defensive end they ever faced in college. And I saw it with Tyler Shuck. I saw it with Jackson Dart. I saw it with Cam Ward, although there was a sad,
sick kind
of confidence in his eyes when he saw it happen.
I didn't really break down all the rookie QBs. I don't know. I guess I'm too busy focused on the Bears quarterback reclamation project right now to really do that like I normally do. But I did watch Tyler Shuck because I was curious, and I thought that was a guy who definitely looked like he was not ready for NFL game speed.
Yeah.
His clock was a little like too fast, a little scared, which is funny because Tyler Shuck played in college for like 50 years. So he should be on the Bo Nick thing where it's like, you may not be super talented, but at least you're ready. And he did not look like that at all.
I was impressed with Jackson Dart's release, I guess, only because, you know, after last year with Jaden Daniels, I'm like, okay, well, obviously that's a valuable asset to have in the NFL. But yeah, just really good at getting the ball out quickly and accurately to his first read, which I guess is cool now. All right, the kids love that. That's what's hot in the streets is getting the ball out quickly to your first read. So he did pretty well. But man, Tyler Shuck looked so lost out there. He had one nice long throw to a wide open dude on a busted coverage, and thank God for that. You hold on to that, buddy, because this year's about to get real rough for you.
Yeah, I am fascinated by what's actually going to happen with the Saints this year. Oh, yeah. So that's the Browns. That's the Tyler Shuck thing. Or that's the
Tyler Shuck thing, yeah.
The Shedeur Sanders thing. Sadly, though, he did apparently injure his oblique. So I guess the Browns are probably grateful that they don't have to deal with it. Right, they can just, you know, oh, he's injured, and go for it that way. So
right. Yeah, I agree. It's too bad because I really want to see this Browns quarterback circus continue. I still have no idea how they're going to settle this QB room. Like it seems like Joe Flacco is going to start, which is insane. But what do you do behind him? Like, you have to keep Gabriel and Shedeur, right? Like, there's no way you're keeping Kenny Pickett on this roster. They signed Tyler Huntley, but hopefully that's just a band-aid. Like, what are they going to do? Are they going to cut? Would they actually cut Shedeur Sanders, like, after the preseason? There's no way, right?
Yeah, I would think, my guess is if you're absolutely determined not to play Shedeur, you keep him as QB3. You keep either Huntley or Pickett as your first off the bench backup in like a game, like one of those situations where, like, if you're trying to compete, you have Flacco start, and if he gets injured for that game where he gets injured, you bring in like a Pickett off the bench. But then the next week with a full week of practice, you would start Shedeur, kind of situation. And then I think you probably just you do the old medical redshirt and just pretend Dylan Gabriel has an injury and you put him on IR for a year, so you have to admit you cut a draft pick in the same season. But yeah, I don't know.
It's a disaster out there in Cleveland. Yeah. It always is. It always is for those people.
Yeah, and speaking of the other main quarterback battle in the AFC right now, the Colts.
We got 2 minutes to talk about the Colts.
Yeah, the Colts situation. I saw earlier today Stephen Holder with a main Athletic beat writer for the Colts. It was basically saying, like, neither one of them's really distinguished themselves. It's kind of just about, you know, whatever your particular flavor of quarterback is, which one you would opt to go with. And I would think, like, if it's close at all, you have to give Anthony Richardson one more shot, right?
I would give him one more shot, but I would also say that part of the reason I think Dimes is going to play a lot this year is I do think that's the style of quarterback Shane Steichen would be more interested in. It would be what? Daniel Jones' sort of mechanical, conservative bullshit rather than Anthony Richardson kind of throwing away half of your plays into the third row.
Yeah, oh my God, it was really funny. Steve Palazzo, who one of the main guys for I don't think he's on PFF anymore. He started on PFF. He's now on a show called Check the Mic. He was at the practice today and was tweeting he tweeted, let's see here. I'm just going to read the tweets in order here. Anthony Richardson dimed to Anthony Gold on a deep ball for a touchdown in one-on-ones. Next tweet. Richardson misses a wide-open running back in the flat in red zone work. Then comes back with another perfect 20-yard fade that is dropped. Richardson deep seam is late and behind, picked off by Jonathan Baldwin. Every Richardson pass is alternating between great and awful. Richardson overthrow on a seam and deep out. Richardson dealing during 2 minutes, strikes to Michael Pittman and Tyler Warren. Next tweet. Not being hyperbolic here, but nearly every Anthony Richardson pass has been right on his receiver's hands or missed by a mile. About 5 to 6 dimes and 6 to 7 wild misses so far. Like, yeah, I just, and that to me, like, this is his third, offseason. Like, you'd think if he was going to show any, and this was always my problem with the Anthony Richardson thing. Is it's not just an experience issue with him. Clearly. The mechanics are wonky. The footwork is wonky. That's the only way you get the incredibly atrocious accuracy that he has on short throws. That was the thing that I harped on in the draft episode. I actually was re-listening to it because I knew we were going to talk about the Anthony Richardson thing. I wanted to go back and see what I said. I was like, people are trying to excuse the low completion percentage because of how deep he throws the ball on average, and his ADOT was ridiculous. I was like, but what concerns me is it's not his deep passes that are causing his completion percentage to be low. That's part of it, certainly, the shot selection. But he has under 70% completions on throws that are 0 to 9 yards. I'd never seen that routinely. And he's done it every year, both years that he's been in the NFL. Like, he had a completion percentage in the 50s, I think, on short passes this year. That is insane. Caleb Williams, for all that his rookie year was a disaster in so many ways, had a completion percentage, I think, over 80% on throws between 0 to 9 yards beyond the line of scrimmage, not counting throws behind the line of scrimmage, just 0 to 9 yards. Like, that's even Caleb or even Justin Fields in his rookie year was at like 64.7% completions on short throws. And that was a real concern we had about Justin. That was still like 10 percentage points higher than what Anthony Richardson managed. He had a completion percentage of 42% on non-screen passing attempts last year. Like, it's not just a processing issue. In fact, that one of the reasons I think people have a hard time giving up on Anthony Richardson is that I don't, even though he took that awful sack and got himself injured, missed the blitz or whatever, I don't think, especially post-snap, I don't think Anthony Richardson has terrible processing. He actually, his eyes are usually in the right spot and he makes good decisions. That's why he has generates explosive pass plays often enough that it's even still a conversation. His processing is not that bad. It's literally a mechanical issue. Like, he cannot consistently deliver an accurate football. And if the mechanics haven't been changed, and it doesn't even seem like the Colts have diagnosed it as a mechanical issue.
Yeah.
They haven't picked, that was the thing with Josh Allen, was we heard, you know, he went into the lab and he had the lasers track his throwing motion and he did all of this. And he repped it thousands and thousands and thousands of times until he stopped overstriding, until he fixed the issues he was having. It was unprecedented, and nobody's really done it since. Anthony Richardson needed to go to that lab, but he's still just misfiring on all these short passes. And I don't think that gets fixed. But at the same time, the alternative is Daniel Jones.
So I think
you gotta just try.
Like, honestly, I think the problem is, like, directly Jalen Hurts, because there is a guy whose mechanics have never been good. Like, Jalen Hurts has maybe the weirdest throwing motion in
the NFL. He's got a loopy throwing motion.
Right, and I talked to you about this before he got drafted.
Well, and Jalen Hurts
really
was
high on him, and I was like, it's
Jalen
weird.
Jalen Hurts was the reason we held on to hope for Justin Fields a little too long, too.
That's right. But, I mean, Shane Steichen knows all about that, right? And he's here looking at Anthony Richardson like, well, I don't know. Like, guys have weird throwing motions. Sometimes guys are just really deadly accurate, and they just don't do it the same way everybody else does. And yeah, it works for Jalen Hurts, but more often than not, this does not work. But
well,
the problem with Tony is, when it works, oh my God, he is right. So accurate. It's just that half the time, it's not accurate at all.
Well, and that's the problem. That's the case. I have seen some people make about Anthony Richardson, and it is some of the stuff that we pointed out as his when we were talking about what is his floor, and we were saying, like, well, he's pretty good at sack avoidance.
Yeah.
And he was pretty good about it. He was pretty good at that last year, which is good because you lose a lot of EPA on sacks. So if you don't take a lot of sacks, that's a good base. And he does generate explosives down the field. He had a lot of success. He had a fair amount of success generating downfield passing success. And then, of course, he also adds a lot of EPA on successful scrambles. So, like, somebody pointed out, you know, that, like, in terms of overall EPA, et cetera, Anthony Richardson's chaos actually was pretty close to what Joe Flacco did for them overall when you accounted for the flack Sacco took and when you accounted for that. But as much as I want to embrace that as an analytics nerd, like, there's no consistency to that. It's so random and it's not on schedule. You can't game plan, okay, Anthony's going to scramble here for 9 yards. You can't game plan, all right, Anthony's going to hit a 40-yard bomb on the run here. You can't get, it's cool when it happens, but like, a coach can't coach that, and it's maddening. And it's kind of like a Javier Baez in baseball, where it's like, yeah, when he's hot and the homers are coming, it's awesome. But then you have those weeks where he strikes out 10 times in a row, and you can't plan around that.
He'd bring up an even earlier argument we would always have. He's the Adam Dunn of the NFL.
Right. You have Adam Dunn versus, because I'll never forget that Grantlet article about Adam Dunn and Juan Pierre and how in the early days of sabermetrics, like, Adam Dunn was like he was the god of sabermetrics, because people would be like, batting average doesn't matter and defense doesn't matter. And this guy hits homers and he takes walks and that's all that matters. And he's way better than Juan Pierre. But then, like, newer models, newer advanced metrics, they came up with, you know, WAR, wins above replacement, and they started to account for things like defense actually mattering, and base running actually mattering. And what ended up being the funniest thing ever is that Juan Pierre and Adam Dunn both retired with like the exact same amount of career wins above replacement.
Yeah.
So like, these two diametrically opposed approaches still resulted in fundamentally in one way resulted in the same ball player. And that's kind of Anthony Richardson versus Daniel Jones right now, because Daniel Jones is going to take more sacks. He's always taken sacks. But he's going to be bad on schedule. Anthony Richardson, everything he's going to do is nothing's going to follow the schedule. And coaches value the schedule, man. That's why Justin Fields had no trade value a couple years ago in a world where people were falling over themselves, or a year ago when people were falling over themselves to give Sam Darnold money and stuff, because there is a coach in Kevin O'Connell. If you believe that strongly in your scheme and you believe that you can give a guy an open target to point and click at, all you want is that guy who can point and click or who can point and shoot. If you have a guy like Justin Fields who can't be relied upon to point and shoot even when it's there, you don't want that guy. And that's Daniel Jones. They're relying on him to point and shoot. And it's probably not going to actually make them any better than the chaos of Anthony Richardson, but no coach wants to just willingly roll with chaos.
Yeah, we're in a league right now where, you know, Mr. Irrelevant is making $50 million a year because Kyle Shanahan just needs a guy who's going to do exactly what he says when he says it, and he doesn't have to do anything spectacular or creative or overly interesting with his arm. It's just like, hey, listen to me, bud, and I'll take you to the promised land. And that's what I see with the Colts. I see the same thing. Like, would you rather have Anthony Richardson, you know, a guy who ostensibly can run the entire playbook, so you want to give him whatever play, you know, you can dream up, but he's going to just collapse horribly half the time, and then the other half the time he's going to do some really cool shit? Or do you want to pare that playbook down to maybe 40% of the plays you can run because you got a guy who should probably not be throwing it further than 12 yards downfield? And even if you tell him to, he probably won't, you know, but once every 50 throws. But if you give him those plays, he's going to put the ball where he's got to put it, like 6 yards down the field. Is that better? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, we watched Brian Daboll manage to jerry-rig an offense with Daniel Jones for a year before. Now, people adjusted schematically to what he was doing.
They closed that loophole. They did.
But we have seen it happen once. So if Steichen has managed to, you know, jerry-rig a different Daniel Jones offense, maybe, you know, but yeah, it's I would still start Anthony Richardson because, I mean, at some point you just got to see this thing through to its bloody end. And if it's close, you know, you default to the younger guy that's technically still has potential. But, man, yeah, I'm very interested to see how that works out, too.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like,
you know, there's a whole bunch of hope for the Alex Smith event horizon taking root and Daniel Jones out there. It just sounds like, you know, the Colts beat writers are kind of hopeless. Like, well, they both kind of suck, guys. Like, it's just, it's flavors of suck out here. It doesn't matter who we pick. So, yeah, I'm all out of topics right now. Do you got anything else you want to talk about football-wise, Kyle? You want to talk about anything else, like, life-wise, philosophy, baking?
We needed to, one last thing we do need to talk about.
Yeah.
Matthew Stafford in the Immortal Chamber.
We got.
Do you think he's in there right now?
Buddy, if I could have an Immortal Chamber roll up on my house and go lay in it. Oh, yes.
I should have never smoked that shit. Now I'm in the Immortal Chamber, man.
Poor Matt Stafford and his broken bones. He just wants to get through one more season. Why? I don't know.
I'm at the Pizza Hut. I'm at the Immortal Chamber. I'm at the combination Pizza Hut Immortal Chamber. So
that's definitely what I want after I go to Pizza Hut, is to get into the Immortal Chamber.
Yeah, I mean, I guess... Yeah, I mean, I thought the Rams really, like, I did it as soon as it was me with the quarterback rankings. The minute that I put Matthew Stafford into A tier and said, yeah, I think this is the year I trust him to stay healthy and I can just say he's an A tier quarterback. And immediately, it's really funny how the Rams are still like, we hope to have Stafford back by week one. And every single day, it's like, yeah, Stafford is in shirts and shorts. He's not practicing. And, you know, earlier today, he couldn't, like, he needed a grad assistant to help him squat over the toilet so he could shit, but I think it's going to be okay. So
he's going to be carried to the huddle by his lineman, Byron Leftwich style.
Byron Leftwich style on every play.
Yeah, but I don't want to count the Rams out because, you know, even if he hobbles his ass out there, it's still just like, God damn it, is that Matt Stafford? He's going to be good somehow.
Yeah, you know, if he plays, he's still going to be the dude. But, like, yeah, it's a real question of if he's going to play at this point. So,
all right, well, I'm yawning. I think that's a – let's call it a podcast. Let's hope the Bears have a good joint practice against the Bills, and then they also look good Sunday night because God knows, you know, you people need to shape up around here when it comes to the vibes.
Yeah, if they look good Sunday night, guys, we'll be here Monday. All right. Yeah. We will give you 2 hours on how awesome
and if
is.
They look bad, we'll be here next Thursday after you've all had time to stop pissing your pants. So.
That's right. We will all calm down. We'll be back Thursday.
Preseason doesn't matter.
Doesn't mean fucking anything, right? Unless Caleb dominates. And we'll ride off that for 3 weeks until they play the Vikings.
All right. Good
evening.
Night,
way out that bummer's road. Now you know I'm leaving Chicago, and people I sure do hate to go. Now you know I'm leaving.